using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, this is a special report. And live on this Saturday, we have Jack Lawson joining us to talk about the very dangerous situation that you may not think is going to happen where you live. But what is happening in South Africa right now is just a minor event away from happening anywhere. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And joining us on the line is Jack Lawson. His Civil Defense Manual, and of course you can find it at civildefensemanual.com. Jack has a lot of experience in these types of situations, and as he makes it clear in his manuals, he's had experience in Rhodesia. And so I wanted to talk to him for several reasons. First, we want to talk about his contacts in the area, what he thinks is ultimately behind this, this massive rioting and widespread looting, what is happening in South Africa. We've seen this type of thing before. So first we're going to talk a little bit about what is happening there, but folks, you need to understand, just as his manual points out, he begins a story of a survival story from somebody who was not in the Third World. He was not in Africa, anything like this. And the situation where he had to live for well over a year under situations where the entire infrastructure was down. It doesn't take a political maneuvering. It doesn't take much to take down the infrastructure of a modern state. And so this could happen naturally, organically. It could happen because we have the power grid fail, because we're all just, a big blackout away from having panic over our food supply. And that's what you're now starting to see in South Africa. But joining us now is Jack Lawson, civildefensemanual.com. Thank you for joining us on this Saturday, Jack.
David, it's always good to hear your voice and be on your show.
Well, thank you. Let's talk first about what you believe is the bigger picture here. Everybody's looking at all the violence that is happening, and that is very frightening, and we'll talk about how to address that, how to prepare for that. But first, give us your idea of what you think is really going on there.
As far as South Africa?
Yeah. Just in the general area, what do you think is happening in politics and
geopolitics? Yeah, I've lived in South Africa. I lived more in Rhodesia for the most time. I went to parachute school in Bloemfontein, South Africa, and I trained with South African Recce Commando. So I've got a pretty good idea. A lot of this was out in the bush. A lot of it was around Africans. I have to tell you, they're generally caring, beautiful people. They have been screwed over for a long time by what I would say is the grifter element that's gotten into control of their government. I don't think the current riots are anything to do really so much with racial. It's haves and have not. Which, if you put that picture over America, I have to play the same tune again. I keep advocating Americans store food and water and organize with some of their neighbors, at least a few of them, for self-protection, as I've outlined in the Civil Defense Manual. And the reason I say this is you cannot deal with a situation that goes bad. Like in South Africa, you'll see blacks, whites, Orientals, Asian Indians trying to stop these looters.
Yeah.
from coming into their neighborhoods.
Exactly, and, trying to protect their neighborhoods, which is what you're talking about in your manual. And the other part of this, though, is we've now started to see, I played a clip of a young soldier that was there, and he said, we've got to start protecting this shopping center because, you know, they've taken all
That's
the stores down. We're not going to be able to eat.
Yep.
Yeah, and that happened so quickly.
The worst part of South Africa, this is also very tribal. I don't think it's as much racial. I'd say it's more tribal. This is Africa. Before I go any further, I've got to give you an idea of your average listener has to understand that this is totally different than the United States in regards to the Africans and the whites over there. The black African is not stupid like a lot of people try to be. They might be ignorant, which by the dictionary is unaware, uneducated, and unmindful of technology and whatnot, but they got to throw the intelligent quotient test out. These people, I've run into black people that are extremely intelligent, very, very capable people, but because of when I was over there, because of skin color, they took second place to a white skin that might be a moron. But the bottom line is they don't live in the present. They have few thoughts or worries about tomorrow or the future. Now, this is the general tribal African. I'm almost envious of that, but it doesn't work in modern society. This change to majority rule and modern technology society that we have has come down on them like an avalanche of rocks. There's 3 points I have here. Two, their products are being raised in an autocratic environment of tribal elders. You have to understand, even though these people live in towns, they belong to different tribes. There's 3 major tribes over there. The Zulu are the ones that are riding right now, the Venda and the Xhosa people. And they're raised in a manner that basically there's an elder, and when I say elder, he's basically the autocrat. With a council, he makes a decision as to what goes down. Number three, tribes are everything. It's almost ingrained in their DNA. They've been fighting for years, and they've either got a political leader in there. Now a guy by the name of Ramaphosa has replaced the Zulu president, Zuma, who has been thrown in jail for contempt of court. And so you've got them riding, and that's more of an excuse than anything, I would say. But tribe is everything over there. It's like the Bloods and the Crips. Mm-hmm. They're constantly fighting. Colonials kept us all in check. Mm-hmm. But they don't think by the same thought process as we do. But they have, in the Natal province, which is the basis of the majority of Zulus live there, they've destroyed not only the malls where people are getting their food, they've destroyed some of the port facilities, and they've destroyed and totally emptied the warehouses of food. So I don't know whether the rest of the country is going to come to their aid or the outside world, but there's a possibility they're going to have some people going hungry in a while, because you just can't take the food chain down like that and expect it to start up again.
Yeah, you know, we talk about the tribal aspects. What we have in America, we've basically broken our contact with the past, and that even includes, you know, we don't have any sense of belonging to a community or to a state, or in many cases, even our family has been kind of broken up because everybody moves thousands of miles away once they start to work. So we've been very atomized. These people are kind of like the Hatfields and the McCoys, aren't they? So there's a lot of long animosity towards different tribes. Is that what you're saying? That's at play here?
And I advocate that people form a neighborhood protection plan like I have in my book. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is get together with some of your neighbors. People, I'm writing my latest essay. I'm torn between two titles. One of them is The Mexican Gardener Did It, which is a parallel to what's going on in this country. People dump these Mexicans, illegals, Hispanics all into one lump, and that's not true. I mean, most Hispanics in America are no different than my ancestors or your ancestors. They're honest, they care, they're hardworking people that love the country. Mm-hmm. But this forced migration is a parallel to what happened in South Africa. South Africa had the mother of all immigration problems. They had, because it had so much industry, Rhodesia did too, until the communists took over and ruined that. Then the Zimbabweans were coming across, the former Rhodesians were coming across illegally into South Africa. The South African blacks were actually killing the black Zimbabweans because there was so much competition for work, and these people would work for nothing. They wanted to eat like anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
From Mozambique, the immigration came across illegally through the Kruger National Park. It was a sad situation. You had people tying themselves into the top of trees so they could sleep and keep a lion from getting them.
Wow.
I'll give your readers or your listeners a little trivia. If a lion takes you down, he goes for the trapezius, your back muscles, your gluteus maximus, your butt muscles, and your quadriceps, your upper leg muscles, and then they leave the rest for scavengers. But these people had to tie themselves into trees and keep themselves from getting eaten. And there were literally thousands of them that fed the lions. And I heard a story that the lions were actually had kind of a gauntlet because they knew all these people were coming through. And it was easier to chase a person down than it was to hunt, you know, a wild game.
Oh, yeah.
But they had the illegal problem like we never had. They had hundreds of thousands of people come in. And this is backfiring on them now because in addition to the communists taking control of South Africa and basically destroying the country, the grifters stealing the money, anybody in power there steals money. And on top of that, you've got so many people out of work that there's so many have-nots over there that that's helping fuel the impetus for these riots now.
Yeah, and it's very, that's very parallel to what we have here in the U.S. because you have you know, the draw, the pull to bring people in is because they want cheap labor, and then you have the politicians who say, yeah, and we can use that massive group of people to realter society to keep ourselves in power. It's exactly the same fundamental forces that are there that may look differently in that country, but that's essentially the same principles.
Yeah, and in doing so, it's depleting our financial reserves. You and I and virtually everybody around you and me have powered this system for years by paying into Social Security and taxes and whatnot. We powered this system that is now being fed to people that have come in and have never put a dime into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part of that is it isn't unemployment, but at some point I think that the chickens have got to come home to roost. There's going to be some accounting of this, and the only thing I can really see would be inflation to the point to where what you go to buy, you're not going to be able to buy enough. So it's going to be another one of these stories. What do I do, pay the mortgage or feed my family? You know,
I agree. And that's another aspect of preparation. Yeah, and what we see coming in, as I point out with the politicians, they're able to use this massive this mass of humanity that's coming in, foreign culture that doesn't really know what to do, what's going to happen? They're going to become the tribal leader of this massive group of people that they brought in. So the corporations get the cheap labor. The politicians get to create a massive new tribe, and this doesn't matter which country this happens in, that is essentially dependent upon them. Talk a little bit about, as we saw, the looting that was. I don't know if you have any more that you want to say about in terms of the politician, the politics that's happening there in South Africa before we move into looting. Is there anything else that you wanted to say?
Well, the only thing I'll say, I wrote another book called The Slaver's Will about a colonel in my Special Forces chapter who rescued 1,700 people out of the Belgian Congo back in 1960. It was a classified operation. When it got declassified, Vietnam and the Tet Offensive was going on. It got relegated to the back pages. So I wrote the story at request of another author that on his deathbed, and this story basically, the intelligence agencies of the world knew that if Central Africa, the Congo, which is the richest landmass per square mile in Africa, if it went communist, there would be 8 countries around there that would be taken down by counterinsurgency and a further 9 around those. South Africa was never, ever thought by anybody to ever go communist. It actually was birthed by independence by the African National Congress. It was birthed as a communist country. Mm-hmm. It hasn't gone hard left like some places have gone, like Cuba went, or Angola, but it has had this communist, the socialist attitude that's also assisted in rooting their economy. But the long and short of it, I think, I know that in some way China's got its fingers into this whole situation. They will benefit. Whether they have done anything to instigate this or not, I wouldn't know. But the bottom line is, with their Road and Belt Initiative, which they're putting roads, belts, all kinds of public projects into these countries, and they're basically loan sharks with this. If they can't pay, like recently in the Central African Republic, they couldn't pay the debt on this to China, so China took their whole electric grid over. They own it now. Mm-hmm. And this is what they're doing. South Africa is the jewel of Africa. It's got just about more than just about any other place outside of the Congo. But I got a feeling that one way or another the Chinese are going to benefit out of this. You may see troops there. They've loaned the present ruler of the country, they've loaned him $25 billion. And so you could possibly expect naval bases there being more used by the Chinese, and possibly troops on the ground.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This is the old gun. It's modern-day gunboat diplomacy.
Yeah.
You don't pay your debt, we're going to have the gunboats come down your river and bombard the hell out of you. Well, this will be a very subtle takeover of things. But that's a political end, and I don't live there anymore, but I know the people, and they're great people. I hope they pull through this thing. I hope they get together enough to pull through this, but I think they got a lot more problems coming than we're seeing right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And one of them is the same thing that we have, the food situation. Their supply chain has basically been destroyed right now.
Mm-hmm.
How they're going to rectify, that's another issue.
Yes. Yeah, before we move into that, in terms of what you were saying about China and the Belt and Road Initiative, I talked about that yesterday, and the mini projects. Africa, Asia, Central America, Europe, many places where they've gone in with supposedly going to build them up with infrastructure, but as you point out, they're like loan sharks. The infrastructure doesn't work, or they don't finish it for whatever reason. They still want to be paid for it. If the country can't pay their bills, then they go in and they've taken some land and some other sovereign things in various places. But for the most part, what they do is they use that as leverage, as you pointed out, to establish bases or to establish control of politicians that they've bought out. So that is another level of corruption that's going to go there. And they're focused on getting into these places where they can grab the natural resources. Some of it is geopolitical in terms of military bases. Some of it is having access to gold or to the rare earth minerals that are rare and are used quite a bit in high-tech equipment that is going to. So they're getting a chokehold on those strategic resources as well as strategic military locations. Let's talk a little bit, though, about. Yes, go ahead.
I got to say one thing. I believe this. I believe whoever controls Africa is going to control the world, one way or another, because there is more mineral wealth on that continent than you can possibly believe.
Yeah.
I'm not just talking about diamonds or gold, rare minerals, nuclear fission materials in the Congo.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever controls South Africa is going to control the rest of Africa. It's just going to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's true. Let's talk a little bit about the looting aspects, which kind of gets into your wheelhouse here, the Civil Defense Manual, because there's a couple of different things that are happening here. Number one, how do you defend your neighborhood? And then number two, looking at how vital it is to prepare, because even as we see some of these individuals coming out and saying, and it was a black soldier who was talking to the reporter and saying, we're starting to organize people here to protect the shopping center and the mall because that's our lifeline. The problem is that even if they protect that particular place where you could go buy the food, the lifeline, the supply lines have already been cut in many other ways, and this all happens so very, very rapidly. It really underscores the need for advanced preparation and then to be able to defend that in your neighborhood. So let's talk a little bit about what we've seen in the last week. I mean, we've seen video pictures of massive groups of people slowly coming down the road. It looks like something straight out of a zombie movie. And people who are banding together to defend their home or their neighborhood lined up with guns and taking some, you know, warning shots and pot shots of these people. So it's kind of a standoff there. But it was pretty amazing to watch that happen. Talk a little bit about what people need to know and what you cover in your book, Civil Defense Manual, in terms of protecting your neighborhood from this type of scenario.
People need to understand this, is you cannot defend your own home with your shotgun, hunting rifle, AR, a machine gun, whatever you've got. You can't do it by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a combination of things. You have to have your neighbors involved. You have to have some kind of what's called overwatch. I call it outflanker marksman in my book. I go into the tactics and the way to set a defense up for a neighborhood. You don't need your entire neighborhood involved in this. You can get enough people together in your neighborhood. I'll guarantee you, if people aren't aware of what's going on in the world, they got their head buried in the sand. It's, by the way, we've probably got another variation of this lockdown coming. So that alone is going to cause some problems.
Yes.
I'd like to go to one thing I put on my latest newsletter on civildefensemanual.com, and that is the supply chain. Again, I keep urging people, store water, get some, if nothing else, buy bottled water. Get 20, 30 cases of it. It's cheap. Buy dense, high caloric foods, cans of, not SpaghettiOs, but cans of beans, buy rice. It's cheap, it's dirt cheap, it's sitting there, and it blows me away that people went after the toilet paper first. Well, you know, you got to put something in the other end to use toilet paper, and it just totally amazed me how illusionary people are, and how a lot of Americans have just lost their sense of reality. I've got a son that says people his age can't tell the difference between reality and fantasy anymore. Yeah. I think he's right to a degree. But buy food and store food, but in your neighborhood, you have to have some type of advance warning. So you've got, say you've got 400 people in a neighborhood. I'll guarantee you, if you can't get 30 people to get involved with a neighborhood protection plan, and I'm not talking about, there's different levels of dress and behavior you use, but basically watch your entrance and exit, because the first problems that come en masse to this country, you're going to see the problems come to your neighborhood by vehicle, unless vehicles are disabled, which I don't think even an EMP, possibly 6% of vehicles won't work. I've read 70%. That's an electromagnetic pulse, which destroys electronics.
Right.
I've read that 70% of the controls in your vehicle won't work, but say 94% of vehicles are still operating. You're going to have problems coming to your neighborhood by people and vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see, I don't care what area you live in, and I totally urge, if anybody listening to this is living in a major metro area, look at getting out of there now.
Yes.
It is going to be the worst, and Matt Bracken pushes this all the time. Matt Bracken, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, he's a great author, Greg, some of the best books I've read,
mm-hmm.
and he's very visionary. He says the blue areas, you've got to abandon the blue areas. And I totally believe that, because not only are you going to have massive shortages show up first there versus being in a smaller town or a rural area, you're also going to have draconian controls. You've got a lot of liberal people there, and they seem to be the worst when it comes to fairness or any sense of justice or individual justice. Those are the people that are going to lock everything down, and these people are not people you want to live under their control.
That's right.
So get out of those areas. If you're looking at moving, move. I know this is hard to say to a lot of people because they have jobs there, they earn a living, they got a house, but the real estate market is great. sell your house and look at moving to an area which I'll deem the red area. I don't know how they got that reversed, but red used to be the color of communists.
I think that was deliberate, Jack. You know, they always like to do that. They always take other people's...
It was.
Yeah, they project their labels onto you. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, it's typical communist Marxist psyops.
Yes.
They reversed this in 1983. I actually looked this up. The first time they started calling conservatives red was back then. And red has traditionally been the color of revolution throughout the ages.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody had a red hat on, they were being looked at as this guy wants to overthrow the status quo.
Yeah.
But, you know, these people are not going to be people you want to live around or under. And your systems there, the supply systems, are going to go down there first.
Yes, yes. And of course, we've had a good advance warning this last year, because as we see what has happened in terms of this lockdown over the pandemic, and you can see people's different responses to it, you can see which states, the vast majority of people and the ruling political parties, you can see how they've reacted to this. That might give you a very good idea of where you want to be and where you do not want to be, just looking at this last year, looking at 2020 and the pandemic lockdown. That should tell you.
Yes. I've also gone and investigated extensively something that I've coined. I put this in my latest newsletter. It's basically the computer and technology has driven this. We used to have a supply system that looked like a big fat snake from one end to the other. You know, it was full in the middle. That middle was reserve foods that producers made and kept in their warehouses, that distributors kept in their warehouses. Because of technology, you have what I call a high-activity, instant feedback system now. That grocery store, at 10 o'clock at night before they close, they inventory. Well, there's an inventory through the cash register, and they may inventory their stock, but usually they inventory through the cash register. We sold 400 loaves of bread today, so we need 400 loaves of bread. So that immediately goes to their distribution center, who, if they have outside vendors, immediately tells them by the next day, in the middle of the night, they're making bread, there are 400 more loaves there. But what they used to do is they used to have 2,000 loaves of bread, some in the baker's warehouse and some in the distribution warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
That is no longer there. So that snake, that big long snake that represents the distribution system, the supply chain of the food chain and everything else, is now very, very thin. There
mm-hmm.
is literally no storage of reserve food. So everything is made and shipped almost immediately. It's an instantaneous feedback system.
That's right.
So we no longer just have a complex food chain or supply chain of everything that we need. We have one that's devoid. There are some places that have gotten rid of warehouses. They don't need them. They
mm-hmm.
truck directly to your store. So your grocery store has 400 loaves of bread in the morning because they knew at 10:30 that night that they need to make 400 loaves of bread.
Right.
And there's no reserves.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's
just in time,
very dangerous thing.
That just-in-time delivery system that you're talking about. You know, the accounting, and you know, not having any overhead inventory costs and everything. So it's driven by accounting, but it's enabled, as you pointed out correctly, by the computers that are there. And as you pointed out, it is everything. And that's why when you have a little bit of a disruption, you see, you know, tens of thousands of cars sitting on the parking lots of the automobile manufacturers,
right,
because there's one particular part or a couple of parts that they can't get from the electronics manufacturer because that supply chain thing has been broken. And so it's unbelievably complex and fragile. If you look at what's happening with food production, there's transportation happening all over the place, and that is being driven by the just-in-time stuff. But it is so dependent, and transportation and moving these supplies around and getting there just in time, that entire chain of producing food, the corporate food structure that we have here, is just inundated with legs that are about transportation. And of course, we have our current political environment is to try to completely restructure our transportation, I think what they're going to do is they're going to wind up destroying it. I believe that's their intention. But even if they were just trying to do it.
Anything the government gets their fingers into, you can guarantee it's not going to be working right when they're done.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so, I think it'll be done because of stupidity, but it also, I don't even think they have good intentions in this. So we need to be very concerned about this, and that's why, you know, getting back to your book, the ability to be able to start to provide some of your own food, to store your own food, how to do it cheaply, that is really the key thing because, the food is the one thing you can do without some of the electronic gadgets that you're not going to be able to get for a while, but you can't do without the food.
You know, people even on a very limited income can prepare. My latest newsletter, I put an article out, not just your everyday pemmican. A lot of people don't know what pemmican is. Pemmican is an ancient Indian survival food. These people, especially the Cree in Canada, went through terrible blizzards that last sometimes for a month. They couldn't hunt. They couldn't fish. What do they live on? You know, you can get close to starving from malnutrition in a month. And they made something in the good times called pemmican. It's a mixture of berries, meat, and fat. And the stuff will last forever. You can make it in your kitchen. I've got a great recipe in there from a guy that I call him Mr. Pemmican that's written books about this stuff, and he's a 100% believer in it.
Mm-hmm.
This will keep you from starving to death. I have in there how you can store eggs with hydrated lime. People wonder how they stored eggs back when. You can store eggs that are fresh eggs from a chicken, not washed from a grocery store, but fresh eggs from a chicken have a bloom on them, and if you put them in water and hydrated lime, you can keep them for up to 2 years. They'll stay fresh. But one thing you said, David, you made a very good point. You know how complex a system is with the car manufacturers and other issues. It is never an issue until people have it hit them in the face, and it's food. Food is where you're going to really see people come awake. But I put an article. I watched a series called Wayward Pines. One of my favorite actors, Toby Jones, an Englishman, he made a statement in there that just hit me. He's making a statement about the mutation of humans and how everything went bad in the world. This is a fantasy show, but he makes a statement. The problem is the concept of time. It seemingly goes on forever. Nothing is of a demanding urgency to some, and the problem isn't real unless it affects them directly, and then it's too late. This is the same principle encouraging people to have stored water and emergency foods. It's what really scares me. I've got a daughter that gets these prepared foods, you know. She maybe has what will last her for a week in her refrigerator. And it's an issue that, hold on, excuse me, I've got my little, my grandson. No, grandpa's busy.
Well, I think that's the key.
Here.
That's the key thing, and that's why I wanted to get you on, because when I see something like this happening, there's just so many different things that can make this go wrong. It can be political. It can be organic in terms of a trigger, and then this thing takes a life of its own. It could be a conspiracy to make this happen. It could be an attack. It could be something like we've seen this last year where you have the politicians just arbitrarily lock everything down. They're talking about a cyber polygon, planning with that. We've seen a lot of cyber attacks on the infrastructure. And then, of course, it could be something that is, some kind of a sunblast, or it could be inflation. It could be so many different things, and yet it's this fragile infrastructure.
You just said something I have to comment on. Uh-huh. You talked about the cyber polygon. I read a very interesting article that the same World Economic Forum that did this supposed test of the integrity of the Internet, which is controls everything that we get. Go to a grocery store and try to buy something when their computer system's out.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll take cash.
That's right.
Maybe, you know, they would give you the food if you stuck a gun up their nose. But the bottom line is when their systems are down, you got a tough time, and I don't advocate anybody sticking a gun up their nose, to get their food. But the whole thing is this. Before the coronavirus thing hit, I think it was 6 or 7 months before that, the World Economic Forum did a test of infectious disease pandemics.
Oh, yeah.
And the person that wrote this article said, when they're doing a test of something, they're pretty much telling you that there are problems going to come in this area.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
mm-hmm.
you can get into tinfoil hats and conspiracy theories, all this stuff. I look at the reality of it this way. I am prepared. I live what I have in my book. But I don't have a doom and gloom mentality. I don't worry about this because I'm prepared. I've got a group of people that are also prepared,
mm-hmm.
and we work together. So be prepared to relax and enjoy every moment of life. You know, love your family.
That's right.
But I'm prepared, so I know I can weather most situations that come about. And I've encouraged many other people to do. I encourage through this book, without my book, prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Buy food. It's out there. It's cheap. It's sitting there. It's waiting for people. It's so dirt cheap. You can buy enough food to last a family of four for virtually a month on the cost of going out for one dinner. It's so cheap.
That's
and
right.
it's sitting there.
That's right.
But like Toby Jones says, it's not going to affect people until it affects them. And then they're going to know that's too late. Water is the most important element to have. Get together with some of your neighbors and talk about this. Don't be telling everybody what you have in your house until you get a little bit of trust built up there. Avoid the people that aren't interested in this. I believe people can believe one thing. When things go bad, they're going to be knocking at your door. And I don't want to turn people away, but that's what I have to do to protect my family and my neighborhood people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have to do.
That's right. Yeah, so, there's just so many different things. There's so many different things that can do this, and that's why, you know, I look at what's happening in South Africa. I see many parallels, political, you know, the manipulations that have happened there to get them into this situation. And so that's what I warn people. I want to warn people about that, but I also want to warn them that this can be triggered by anything. I mean, we're looking at, I think we're staring down the barrel of hyperinflation. The types of things that have triggered this can be economic. And of course, that has a political aspect to it as well, underlying it. But, you know, at some point, this whole thing may blow up. It could be a natural event. It could be anything. The bottom line is that when you see what's happening right now in South Africa, historically, we've seen it before. You begin your book by talking about a guy, Selko. Nobody won. We just survived with a lot of bad dreams. You say this didn't happen in a third world area. It happened in a civilized country on the European continent.
Yeah.
In this country, diverse cultures and ethnic groups had peacefully coexisted for decades.
And it's the same parallel in South Africa. Same parallel. That the racial tones will eventually come out there, but you can guarantee yourself one thing. Right now, there's some guy driving through the night over there, driving 200 to 300 miles to try to buy food out of some store because they have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's
when
right.
you went down to the store to get the food for your next meal, you don't have a next meal because there is no food.
That's
they
right.
have stripped these. But I saw the inside of a food warehouse in Durban, which
mm-hmm.
is in Natal province,
mm-hmm.
totally barren. I
yep.
mean, there was nothing in this thing. And it was just that the shelving was tipped over. It was totally stripped of any item that could be eaten in that. It was a food distribution store.
Mm-hmm.
So there, and then take the local stores being stripped bare. Where are you going to get food to eat? So somebody is driving in the middle of the night, probably more than one, a truck, individual, whatever. They're driving to try to secure some food, or they're driving out of the area to live with relatives because they can't eat where they are.
Yeah.
And this can very easily happen in this country. I have 23 different scenarios in my book of catastrophic events, all the way down to, you know, tornadoes and hurricanes, from financial collapse, different, and I have the characteristics of these. They're you, by any means, you could add more to it. You could maybe, by semantics, subtract some of these. But I basically lay out what I think would happen in these. And you're 100% right. It's so complex. There are so many facets of anything that can go wrong. But people can count on one thing. When things do go wrong, they're going to get hit from all different sides. Pandemic, rioting, food shortages.
That's
when
right.
this comes, it will come from all different sides. There'll be multitudes of other issues that come into play.
And you don't want to be that guy who is running the gauntlet for 200 miles to try to get to a place where he thinks there's food. There may not be any food
right.
when he gets there. He may not survive that trip there and back. Anything could happen to him either way. So that's why you prepare with this, and that's why I wanted to warn people about this. And I have a copy of your Volume 1 and Volume 2. It's sold as a pair. And it is excellent advice. It's you've had a lot of experience. You've lived this, but you've also talked to a lot of people who are experts in their own field, and you've compiled all that stuff together. It's a great resource for people. Now is the time to educate yourself. So many times people say, well, I don't want to just give people the bad news about what's coming. I see things that are coming. I want to warn people. I want to tell them what we might be able to do to try to oppose this. And I always believe the solution is local. It's not in Washington. That's where the problem is. And so part of the solution is to be able to prepare, first of all, for yourself, your family, your community, your neighborhood, and start to build out from that center, whatever we're talking about.
Yeah. Don't expect your government to come to your aid. If they do come to your aid and FEMA does come in, you want to eat? Okay, throw your weapons in the back of that army truck there.
Exactly.
They'll strip you of everything you've got to protect yourself, yet they will not protect you.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do this in your localized area. I believe that statement. Local, local, local.
Yes.
Organize on a local basis. This is...
Let me just throw something in here.
Let me throw something in here, Jack,
because I had my sons competed in some economics video contests, and one of them was Canada and the U.S. It was the Fraser Institute. And what they did, what he did to win was he contrasted FEMA's response to a hurricane on the coast of North Carolina versus the local response to a tornado in the town. And it was...
That was interesting.
Oh, it was. Because the people who had gone through all this and went out and interviewed people in both places and compared them, the people who went through the FEMA experience, they got the heavy hand of government. Everything about it was heavy-handed and did not help people, even to the extent that they kicked them out, wouldn't let them back into their homes and that sort of thing. Whereas in the other community, where it was a localized disaster because it was a tornado, the power lines were down, the police came out and kept people away from the power lines, but then the companies came in and put food at the church parking lots, and the local people handed the food out. And it was just night and day. And it really underscores the fact that you don't want to depend on the federal government.
That's the way I grew up.
Yes.
People were helping each other.
That's right.
And there's been a disconnect of this, especially in the metro areas. We've turned into garage door communities. We open a garage door, pull our car out, go to work, pull it back in at night, put the garage door down, you don't know your neighbors.
That's
I'm
right.
telling people, don't ignore your neighbors. Get to know your neighbors because, A, they're either going to be at your door or they're going to, for food and water, or they're going to help you control, keep normal civility in your neighborhood.
Yes.
So get to know your neighbors. But get out of the blue areas. If anybody's thinking about getting out, I'm telling you right now, get out.
Yes.
The handwriting's on the wall.
Yes.
I don't do this because I live in a state of doom and gloom, as I said before. I do this because in Las Vegas, there was a guy by the name of Jimmy the Greek. Snyder was his last name. He was an odds maker. And he made a statement that says the longer from an occurrence, the more probability of reoccurrence. Now, I don't think we've starved in this country. Probably quite a few people went hungry in the 30s, but it's been a long time. That's 90 some years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are an instantaneous gratification society. There's food there. Stop in a McDonald's if you're hungry for a Big Mac in the afternoon. I've gone hungry. I've gone without water for 3 days, and walking through Africa, and I'll guarantee you, it was the worst experience. The Indians had a saying, you rose from your body into the spirit world when you got hungry. I think that's probably just before you just about died, and they managed to come back, and that's the feeling you get. And I got to the point to where, I would eat anything. I ate tree bark. it's a horrible situation to be in.
Oh yeah.
People here, they have no concept. So get a concept, get a can of beans extra the next time you go. Just buy, even if you don't like beans, buy them.
Yeah.
Buy a bag of rice. It's cheap.
Yeah.
You know, $7, $8, you can buy 10 pounds of rice. It's dirt cheap. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
There's huge quantities of it. Get something. Store some bottled water.
That's right.
Get together with your neighbors. Talk about this. Because I'll guarantee you, in my neighborhood, there's more and more and more people talking to us because they are seeing the handwriting on the wall. And it's, David, it's very clear. You make it very clear. It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. If people can't see it, you know, they're living in an illusionary world.
Well, it's just such a fragile system that we have developed, and we've seen already a preview of this last year. I think that's a blessing. It's a warning that we've seen a lot of things. We've seen how the schools operate, many parents who are ignorant about that. It was a wake-up call for them, but it's a wake-up call for us to see, as you point out, just how fragile our infrastructure is, and we've only had just a little bit of a taste of it, fortunately, so far. But that is the burden that I have, is to warn people about what is coming, what they can do to proactively protect themselves and their families, to do it locally, because you need to understand what the what politics are about, because you have to be interested in politics, because politics is interested in you, and you need to understand what these people want to do.
Correct.
But they're not the solution, and so you do intelligence to find out what these guys might be trying to do to you, or what they might just inadvertently cause to happen. But the key thing is also to be proactive in terms of setting up solutions. So I wanted to get you on because your experience in South Africa or in Rhodesia, and of course you were also in South Africa somewhat, to get a perspective on that, but also just underscore to people how important it is for them to prepare. If you want to find some great stuff on how to prepare, again, civildefensemanual.com, and Jack has put together two volumes there, and so take a look at that. There's some other resources there. There's some samples from the book. There's a free sample there about water. Very, very important to read that. A great resource, and you need to start thinking about this. Thank you so much for joining us, Jack.
David, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, have a good day. And that's it for our special report. I hope you found something that is useful. And again, you'll find something useful there at civildefense.com. There's a wealth of information. I think if you look at some of the free samples, you'll understand that he really has some great suggestions above and beyond just the basic preparation. He's really thought this thing through. He's lived it. He's got a lot of people who have the experience with it. But I'm just very concerned when I look at this and I see the same political tactics. You know, we are accelerating the tactics of the Democrats. Is nothing new. We all know that it's about division. We all know that they're trying to bring in massive numbers of people for this type of division throughout society. They're dividing us by every possible aspect, whether it is skin color or political beliefs or religious beliefs or now even the vaccination status. Everything there is an excuse for them to divide people and to have people attacking each other so we don't notice what they're doing as they loot and rob us. And that is exactly what the communists have spent the last 150 years perfecting. They know exactly what they're doing. You can see how they're covering for each other in Cuba, these people who have pulled this type of stuff for the longest period of time. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.